However, all this, we may say, is introductory and also by way of illustration. For the last two mornings, we've been dealing with Buddhism in terms of process. In other words, we've been dealing with it in terms of time. We've been dealing with evolution at lower and higher, which of course is a process taking place within time. And we've seen that the Buddha, for instance, is to man, even highly evolved man, very much as man himself is to the amoeba. In other words, the Buddha represents the goal of human development, much as the human being, we may say, represents the goal, ultimately, of the amoeba's development. And then again, on a very much smaller scale, on this smaller triangle, as it were, within our big triangle, we saw that just as the man of genius is the forerunner in terms of aesthetic sensibility and general higher culture, in the same way the Buddha is the forerunner of the human race with regard to spiritual development, with regard to enlightenment. So all this material represented by these first two lectures, evolution, lower and higher, the Buddha, man or superman, all this material represented also in terms of the chart or the diagram, all this is very interesting and very important, but it represents, we may say, only half the truth. We look at things, or we have been looking at things these last two mornings, in terms of time, in terms of evolution, in terms of development, in terms of progress. So that's only one point of view. We now have to start trying to see things in terms of eternity. In other words, we now come today to the other half, the other point of view from which things can be seen, from which they can be observed. So today we are dealing with the subject of the Buddha, God, and reality. In other words, now we are trying to see, we're trying to understand, trying to study Buddhism, not in terms of time, not in terms of progress and growth and development or evolution from the lower to the higher, but in terms of eternity. We're trying to see the Buddha now not as the culmination of a process occurring within time. We're trying to see him today as occurring, as it were, outside time altogether. In other words, whereas for the previous two mornings our approach has been more evolutionary, if you like, more scientific, today it will be perhaps more metaphysical, even more mystical. We're all familiar with the main details of the life of the Buddha. We know that the Buddha was born in the Lumbini garden. We know how he was educated. We know how he left his home. Know how he gained enlightenment at the age of 35. Know how he preached his teaching, his discovery. Know how he founded his Sangha. And we know how, finally, he passed away. We know this, we understand all this quite well. But there's one thing that we don't always understand, or at least that we don't always bear in mind, even if it does occur to us. And this is the fact that the life of the Buddha, the biography of the Buddha, deals in a sense with two quite different people. Deals with two quite different people. One we may call Siddhartha, the other we may call the Buddha. And these two people dealt with by the Buddha's life, the Buddha's biography, these two are divided from each other by the event, by the fact of the enlightenment. Up to the enlightenment, Siddhartha. After the enlightenment, the Buddha. Of course, we usually do understand quite well that the Buddha's enlightenment was the central event of his life. But in what way do we usually think of it? We usually think of the Buddha's life rather like this. Here was the Buddha at home, you see, living with his wife and his child, and then he goes forth. So there's a little sort of ascent. He goes a bit higher. Then he practices meditation in the jungle, yes. Then he sits down at Buddhagaya after 5 years, gains enlightenment, a little slope, and then like that. This is how we think, graphically, of the Buddha's life, as it were. In other words, The Enlightenment is a peak with a gentle slope up to it and a gentle slope perhaps down from it. So this rather illustrates the way in which we think of the Buddha before and after the Enlightenment, the way in which we think of Siddhartha and the Buddha. We tend to think that the Buddha, after his Enlightenment, was more or less the same as he was before, except, of course, that he was enlightened. And we ourselves, have we been around at the time, and have we known the Buddha, say, a few months before he was enlightened, and a few months after he was enlightened, we might not have been able to perceive any difference. Any difference at all, perhaps. We would have seen after all the same physical body, probably the same clothes, and he was speaking the same language, and he had the same general sort of characteristics. We might not, in fact, we almost certainly would not have been able to perceive any difference before and after. So therefore, we tend to regard the Enlightenment, the Buddha's Enlightenment, as a sort of just last finishing touch to a process which has been going on for a very long time. The sort of hair that turns the scale, just that little difference that makes all the difference. But really, we may say, it isn't like that at all. Not in the least like that. We may say that enlightenment, the Buddha's enlightenment, or anybody else's enlightenment, represents the point of intersection, as it were, of time and eternity. Point of intersection of time and eternity. Strictly speaking, of course, it's only a line that can intersect another line. So eternity isn't a line. We can represent time as a line, but not eternity as a line. So in a way, you can't really speak of eternity intersecting time as though it was another line, another time, as it were. It's ridiculous to speak of it in that way. So perhaps we should think rather in terms of a line, that is a time, which at a given point just stops. But this so-called point of intersection, it isn't intersected by another line. The first line, merely time, just stops. Instead of propagating itself indefinitely, it stops. It disappears, as it were, into a new dimension. It's rather like the flowing of a river into the ocean. The ocean represents the new dimension. The river is time. The ocean is eternity, if you like. This simile is, of course, rather hackneyed, but it's still rather useful if one doesn't take it too literally, and perhaps it's possible to improve on it to some extent. Suppose we do that. Suppose we just assume or we imagine that the ocean into which our river is flowing is just over the horizon. So what does one see? One sees the river flowing and flowing to the horizon. But you don't see the ocean into which the river is flowing. So it seems as though the river is flowing into nothingness, flowing into a void. It just stops at the horizon, because that's the point where it enters the new dimension which we cannot see. So time is like that. Time just stops, as it were, at eternity. Time just comes to an end. Time is succeeded by eternity, and this is what we mean by enlightenment. Enlightenment is just like that. Siddhartha disappears, just like the river disappearing at the horizon, and the Buddha takes his place. This is, of course, from the standpoint of eternity. From the standpoint of time, Siddhartha becomes the Buddha. He develops into the Buddha, grows into the Buddha, evolves into the Buddha. But from the standpoint of eternity, Siddhartha just ceases to exist, and there's the Buddha, who has, of course, been there all the time.